All right, welcome back to episode 8 of Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, the managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, Training and Conditioning, and Winning Hoops brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to all of our previous episodes anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites, coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And be sure to follow all of our brands on Twitter, at coach_AD, at train_condition, and at winninghoops, and myself, if you like, at wesleysykes_. And today we welcome to the program Micah Kurtz, strength and conditioning and athletic development coach, owner of theathletemaker.com. He's a 2020 NHSSCA Florida Strength Coach of the Year and 2016's NSCA's Strength Coach of the Year. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us, Micah. How are you?
I'm awesome. I appreciate you you inviting me beyond this. This podcast sounds like it's awesome. As you know, I've been a fan of what you guys do in your magazines for a long time. Been honored to be able to contribute some articles. So it's cool to be part of this podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, congratulations on the Florida Strength Coach of the Year. So can you tell us a little bit about that organization before we jump into it and just maybe what that means to kind of be the recipient of 2020?
Yeah, so the NHSSCA is, I guess it's in its fourth year of existence. It's the National High School Strength Coaches Association. And it's obviously we've had the National Strength and Conditioning Association, the NSCA, and then there was a Collegiate Strength Coaches Association. But there's 30,000 high schools in the U.S. and many of them have full-time strength coaches. And even if they don't have full-time strength coaches, they have somebody that's involved in working with the teams as far as their athletic development. So that market is huge. And there's a group of guys that unbelievable coaches that I'm honored to be able to call good friends. And Coach Schofield, Gary Schofield, was the founder of it. And he kind of identified that the high school market was kind of underserved, where mm-hmm. the NSCA does an unbelievable job, but it's a very wide-ranging organization working with pro coaches, college coaches, private sector coaches. And then the Collegiate Strength Coaches Association obviously was geared all towards collegiate strength coaches. And the day-to-day operations that we have and challenges that we have at the high school level is completely different than a lot of people that are working with pro teams or college teams. So this organization was kind of created so that high school strength coaches had a avenue to network and communicate and learn and equip and empower each other for what we're doing in our daily job at the high school level. So I mean, like you mentioned, I run my own business called the Athlete Maker Sports Performance, but then I'm also full-time employed as the director of sports performance at Windermere Prep School in Orlando, Florida. And so I was blessed to be honored as the Florida Strength Coach of the Year for that association for this past year. And a lot of it has to do with the great coaches and great athletes and great community that I'm able to work with in the Windermere area and at Windermere Prep. And they just, they kind of make me look good by how good they are.
Yeah, you know, and I've always kind of found it interesting of how someone finds their way into the strength and conditioning field. You know, I think when I first heard of strength and conditioning coaches, it might have been on like the Part of My Take podcast, and they're always talking about the strength coaches as the get back guy on the sidelines of the football team and that sort of thing. So, you know, how did you find yourself into this field, and what type of person is a strength and conditioning coach typically that you've come across?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, I think the majority of people that are involved in this field have started out obviously in athletics and had a love for sports and obviously as they were playing, they also found a passion for the weight room. I played three sports in high school, loved football, basketball, baseball. I was always extremely skinny growing up. My dad actually, he was a construction worker and was a pretty strong dude, and he would always call me Stick, and it kind of I didn't like that nickname. And So in my sophomore, towards the end of my sophomore year in high school, I got more involved in working out, and that was really something that I found a major passion in. And I ended up going playing small college football in upstate New York, and continued to find my passion in strength and conditioning. And as I was, my undergrad degree was actually in physical education. I didn't really know much about a full-time, you could have a full-time job as a strength coach really back then. I didn't think that much about it. And obviously as I was in college, I learned more about it. And as I was finishing up, I wanted to, I thought I wanted to be a collegiate strength coach. So I applied for graduate assistant positions all over the country and ended up getting offered one at the University of South Carolina and did that and had an amazing experience working under some unbelievable mentors and Billy Anderson and Pat Moore and Dan Austin and John Baden, who were all strength coaches there at the time. And as I was finishing up my master's degree and my GA position, I got approached by a high school in Columbia, South Carolina, that they wanted to kind of create the school's first ever full-time strength position. And obviously I thought I wanted to be a collegiate strength coach, and their high school strength coaches weren't very prevalent at the time. They're still not overly prevalent. And after talking to my mentors, Billy Anderson especially, I mean, he was like, hey, it sounds like a great opportunity. You can always look back at getting into college if you just try this opportunity. I ended up staying at AC Florida for 10 years, and I've really found that the high school level is my calling, and the impact that we can make at the high school level is absolutely tremendous and potentially bigger impact that you can make at any other level, because we're around these kids for the most formative years of their life. And so I think that to get to the back half of your question, I mean, I think the person that is the people that are successful in this industry, it's not just that they love working out. It's not just that they're a big meathead. It's not, obviously you gotta enjoy working out and have a passion for strength and conditioning. And you have to be very intelligent about program design and exercise science and exercise physiology. But I think the biggest thing is people that care about making people the best at getting better and being able to find what makes each athlete tick and being able to figure out what the goals are and what the promised land is for each athlete, and then being able to help elevate them towards that and understand the athlete and understand when they need to be pushed hard, when they need to have somebody that they can lean on and for advice, and just being a good coach and a good mentor is, and a good person is something that is really successful in this industry. And the more I'm in it, the more I realize that there's a big science component about program design, but it's much bigger, the art component of coaching and being able to understand what each athlete's needs from you on each given day. And then, like I said, the impact that we can have is tremendous, because we're around these at the high school level, you're around them for the most formative years of their life. And then at every level, collegiate, I mean, pro, I mean, we're around the college coaches and are around these guys more than their sport coaches are. You're around them year round. And so the impact that you can have from a day-to-day basis is tremendous.
Yeah, and you know, and I find that really interesting when you said you kind of found that calling at the high school level recently, and then in yourself you found that love for weightlifting. You know, you said around that sophomore year of high school. You know, why do you think it's so important to have a dedicated strength and conditioning program at the high school level, the middle school level, when you know these kids are so much more than student athletes, right? I think they have so much on their plates, whether it's internships or part-time jobs or extracurricular activities that aren't involved in athletics. I see these kids with this huge workload on it, and for me personally, I look at strength and conditioning, just overall fitness, as a great stress reliever. But also can help with that developmental time of, you know, kids who are obviously in puberty. So with all that kind of tied in with in a roundabout way, why is strength and conditioning important to be introduced at, like a middle school or a high school level?
Yeah. That's a great question. And that's something that I really do take a lot of pride in explaining to our administration and the parents of our students and the students, the student athletes. And I run the before and after school strength and conditioning program for all of our athletes. And then I also teach weightlifting classes for for a lot of the athletes are in it, but a lot of the non-athletes are in it as well. And every year, the first day of class, I say, welcome to the most important class that you're ever going to take in high school. And they, and a lot of times they kind of laugh and say, yeah, coach, yeah, I know you love this class and you're passionate about it, but this isn't math. This isn't science. This isn't English. But I say, no disrespect to the other classes that you're in, but the stuff that you're going to learn in this class is you're going to be able to use for the next 40, 50, 60, 70 years of your life. And I mean, calculus is important. You need to take it. It's going to help you in college. A lot of you might use it in college itself. Few of you might use it past college. But the stuff that you learn in this class you're going to be able to take with you for the entire rest of your life to be successful. And we talk about, it's not only going to help you learn how to work out and be healthier and be more productive, but it's also going to help you learn how to overcome obstacles and overcome failure and embrace the process of becoming the best at getting better. And those are things that you can apply to any area of life, whether it's being a better boss or a better coworker or a better brother or sister or a better father or mother or husband or wife. And so from the physical aspect, it's much more about getting bigger, faster, stronger. It's about gaining confidence to take on any aspect of life. And then also from an emotional aspect, I mean, there's so much research out there that shows that working out and exercise reduces anxiety and reduces depression.
You mentioned, I think, in your answer there about the confidence that strength and conditioning and just kind of working out and that weightlifting classes can bring to anyone, but specifically high school age student athletes. And I think one thing that can kind of deter student athletes or even just normal students from going into high school weight, where maybe the intimidation factor, maybe there's too many inside linebackers, defensive linemen who just kind of park themselves in there and make that place their home. It can be a little bit intimidating. But how do you go about kind of breaking down those barriers and making sure that it's a group setting?
Yeah. No, there's definitely, especially at the high school level, like if you're a 13-year-old freshman and you're in the weight room with an 18-year-old senior that's been in there for 4 or 5 years, definitely be very intimidating. And so I like to always talk to all of my students and all of my athletes that this is a unified program, but not a uniform program. And what I mean by that is we're all training towards the same athletic development goals, but we're not going to be all doing the exact same exercises and the exact same movements. And so don't be intimidated if you come in and there's a kid back squatting 400 or 500 pounds and you're a 13-year-old freshman who's never walked in the weight room. We have a systematic process that's going to walk you through to moving towards those goals. So it's unified, meaning we're all doing training towards the same goals, but it's not uniform, where one kid could be doing a back squat, one kid could be doing a front squat, one could be doing a dumbbell goblet squat, one could just be doing a bodyweight squat according to where they are in their athletic development process. And so we differentiate it according to their experience level, their age, the trust level that we have for them in the weight room, the sport that they play. And so the program is broken down into a bunch of different areas, so it meets each individual kid where they're at, and it's not a one size fits all program. And then on top of that, I mean, I like to think that we work hard and train hard in our weight room, but I also want to make it a place where they enjoy coming to. And so I think one of the coolest things about the weight room is every person is competing against themselves, really. And it's often the people that are gain the most respect in the weight room is not always the biggest or the fastest or the strongest. It's the one that works the hardest. And and everybody respects that when they see somebody that's coming in and being dedicated towards their goals and working extremely hard. It doesn't matter if they can only squat 100 pounds or they can squat 500 pounds. People respect hard work. And that's what's cool about the weight room. And it's one of the awesome things is on our test days and stuff, when we have 105-pound freshman that's front squatting for his first time, and he maxes out at 110 pounds, and he's excited, and everybody else in the weight room is excited, just as excited when they see somebody break a new school record in a lift. And so it's about, and we talk about, especially with our young kids, that you're competing against yourself, and
exactly,
you should not be judging yourself on where another kid is and say, oh, this kid's stronger than me, this kid's bigger than me, because one 13-year-old can be at a completely different puberty level than another 13-year-old. And I've seen it time and time again where the best athlete in middle school ends up getting passed by kids that were not very good athletes in middle school, but they've worked extremely hard. They stay dedicated, and then they maybe go through puberty a little bit later in life, and they end up passing that kid that's already hit that growth spurt. So that's some of the things about that we talk about. And then we want to make it a fun place to be where they work hard, but it's also a fun place to be.
Yeah. And I love that too. Yeah. You touched on the competitive nature. And I think just everyone kind of having that competitive spirit from an athletic perspective, but no one really wins, right? It's like, you know, maybe golf isn't even a good analogy for it, because you really are playing against yourself at that point. So I think that's where a lot of people can get into trouble, is that they look and see this big, hulking guy next to you there. And it's like, oh, well, I want to be like him, so I want to put on this extra weight. And that's where injuries come in. So I think having someone who is a dedicated strength and conditioning coach, who knows, you know, how to introduce things, gradual succession of weights, that can explain the why, but not just the how or what behind, each workout, I think is important, especially at that young age, because, you know, now I look at myself, I'm 33. I go on, Instagram, and there's all these, you know, Instagram trainers here, or all these, you know, infographics and diagrams on how to do what's the right form or what's the wrong form, or when you should work out, or you should do this to, you know, get this shape. And there's a lot of information out there. And I think getting it from someone straight from the source, is probably the best way to go about it. I think more schools should look into having a dedicated strength and conditioning trainer, much like you would for an athletic trainer.
100%. And we talk about it all the time in at the high school level. I mean, nobody would ever have a run a public pool or run a pool without us, without a full-time lifeguard.
Right.
So why would you have a weight room and a strength and conditioning program without a full-time dedicated strength and conditioning professional? And the scary thing is, I mean, if somebody's doing something not right in math class or whatever, they're just not going to get a good grade. But if somebody's doing something not right in the weight room or messing around in the weight room, somebody could potentially get seriously injured. So we need somebody that's a dedicated person that understands how to develop a program that's going to meet each kid where they're at.
Yeah. You know, one of the schools that I used to cover prior to this job, the football coach was a fairly young guy around my age or so, but played Division III football up in New Hampshire, Plymouth State University. He's a defensive lineman, so real big guy, and was really into powerlifting all throughout, you know, late high school and all throughout college. And it was a little bit, you know, a little bit of a different time. He might be a little bit older than me, actually, but it was all about heavyweight, you know, as much how many times can you PR or max out or this sort of thing. And he ended up coming out with back issues now. And fast forward to him being a high school, you know, head football coach now and physical education teacher. He works with the athletic trainer at the school to have a off season or in season two strength and conditioning program. And that's his biggest regret. I remember talking to him about it. He's like, you know, what I try to tell these guys now is that you don't have to lift as much weight. You know, it's more about functionality and making sure that you have, the right form on it to avoid those back injuries or lingering injuries that you could have later in life.
Exactly. And like we talked about in the beginning, I mean, just being able to use these concepts for the next 40, 50, 60 years of your life.
Right.
You have injuries when you're 16, 17, and then potentially can't work out for the rest of your life. That's going to set you up for a lot of other issues.
Yeah, so I think this segues nicely. So if I'm a young middle school kid or just getting introduced to strength and conditioning, weight training, what are some basics that you know everyone should kind of have down, whether it's just using body weight or low weight to start out.
Yeah. I think we have five core values in our strength program. Number one is to protect the athlete. Number two is to move well. Number three, move strong. Number four, move fast. And number five is thrive. And so the first one is obviously everything that we do in the weight room, we want to be able to protect the athlete from getting injured in the weight room. And if they play a sport, from getting injured in the sport they play. So we're really focuses on good mobility and good stability. And especially with young athletes, before we load them, they have to have proper core strength, especially where, especially putting a barbell on their back or pressing weight over their head. If they don't have a strong core, that can potentially lead to back injury. So that's the number one, is really a big focus on the core stability, and then mobility throughout the hips and knees and ankles and shoulders to be able to do proper fundamental movement patterns. And then number two, like we said, is move well. So again, that's working on teaching them the proper body weight fundamental movement patterns before even loading them, having them be able to get into a proper body weight squat, a proper hip hinge, a proper lunge, a proper pull up, a proper push up, and being able to do that before we load them. And then the third core value is to move strong. And obviously, especially working with teenage boys, I mean, as soon as they walk in the weight room, they want to see how much they can lift immediately. And that's not what we're about. And we talk to them, hey, before you're going to get under that barbell, you need to be able to get in a proper body weight squat, be able to do a proper goblet squat, be able to do a proper front squat. And so they understand if they want to put that bar on their back, they need to be dedicated to being able to move properly first. And so that's going to help them. That's going to help them stay committed and stay and be accountable to come into the weight room. Because if they want to be able to start moving weight, they have to be able to hit certain benchmarks in those body weight movements and those dumbbell movements. And so I think that's something huge is working on their stability and fundamental movement patterns and slowly progressing them to the barbell. And then even one of the things that we've had a lot of success with is there's the functional movement screen, which is a seven movement screen. It's awesome. It's not something that we implement completely, but just from a time wise with the amount of athletes that come through. But one of them is the push-up stability test, which it's a push-up, but with your thumb, with your hands out wider and up higher, where it makes it a little bit more difficult than a regular push-up, but it measures core stability. And so they need to be able to do a pass that push-up stability test, showing that they have proper core stability before they do any Olympic movements, before they do any barbell loaded on their back movements or any heavy overweight pressing movements. And so that's just a way to protect them from themselves. And it also, it's a very easy test to do. And it also shows them if they failed it. And then it's like, hey, coach, I want a back squat. Well, you haven't passed the push-up stability test yet. We got to work on that first. And so it gives them a goal to pass before they can move on to the next part of our athletic development program.
You know, at the collegiate level, I feel like I've seen a lot of strength coaches that are dedicated to specific teams. Is that I'm sure that can't be the case just for financial reasons at the high school level. So, you know, how much collaboration is involved with the individual sport coaches to maybe tailor a program for, you know, that specific team, or is it something general with this weight training class, or is that something extra that you do on the side, or kind of give us a peek behind the curtain of how that works?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot working with all the sports, and then many of the athletes play multiple sports as well. But I think the biggest thing, obviously, being a strength coach and working with multiple sport coaches is being able to, like you mentioned briefly, being able to explain the why behind what you're doing in your programming, and then also being able to develop that trustworthy relationship with each of the coaches, where they really understand that, hey, the strength coaches, their biggest competitive edge in building a successful program. And so if they trust them and have that full-time strength coach that's dedicated to developing their athletes, that's going to be a huge competitive edge for their program. And the strength coach's number one job is to make those athletes as as big and fast and durable and strong as possible to help them be successful on the field. And so we, again, we every coach I meet with, I talk to them about our five core values. But then also, we're gonna differentiate the program a little bit according to the demands of their sport as well. Where yet we want to protect them from getting injured. They have to be able to move well, no matter what sport they play, especially at the high school level. They need to get a stronger base. Whether you're a golfer, which golfers obviously we know now even at the pro level are extremely strong, but
yeah,
they need to get strong. They're nowhere near their strength, their maximum strength level when they're 14, 15 years old. So if you're a golfer, you're a soccer player, you're a football player, you're a basketball player, any sport, volleyball player, if we want you to move well, get strong, get fast, and that's going to help you in any sport that you play. And then we'll also, we will train them a little bit sport specifically according to the demands of their sport. And we kind of train in the weight room to protect them from the demands of their sport. And so, for instance, like soccer, basketball, volleyball, very quick change of directions, very quick jumping movements every day in practice, year round in games when they're playing, they're developing their quads and the anterior part of their body just from the demands of their sport. And we know as strength professionals, that if your quads are stronger than your hamstrings and glutes, you're going to be more at risk for a knee injury. And so a lot of the stuff that we do in the weight room is to help them, protect them, and help them move better. So we know that in every day in practice, they're building up their quads and the anterior part of their body. So when they come in the weight room, sports specifically, we want to attack their posterior chain a little bit more and strengthen their hamstrings and glutes, which is going to make them move more efficiently, but it's also going to protect them from injury.
Do you notice a difference between specialized sports athletes or in those who are multi-sport athletes, whether it's in the weight room or maybe a lack of injuries being seen or just better overall athleticism? Can you tend to tell without maybe knowing the kids that if they're sports specialized or multi-sport athletes?
Yeah, I think we've all seen that the year-round specialized sport athlete, I mean, they have a tendency to get injured more just because, I mean, if you're a baseball player and you're just continually throwing and rotating year-round, and it's going to set – there's a lot of issues that can occur from that. And so, again, going back to our programming, if it's a baseball player that's playing year-round, I'm not going to – add in programming of him continually rotating. I want to add in programming that's going to focus on the anti-rotation and that stability. And so that's something which we've had success with, and I know a lot of schools that have good strength coaches. They have success where they understand attacking those demands, and then also going towards the multi-sport athlete. There's that challenge of at least getting them some training year round where there's never really an off season for them to rest. So the coach also has to be able to understand how to get them to move well, or him or her to move well, him or her to get stronger, but also not to overly fatigue them. And being at William Rand Prep, a smaller private school, we have a lot of athletes that play multiple sports. And so, we operate on a green light, yellow light, and red light system for in-season training. And so green light means if they're coming to me and it's 48 hours from competition, they're going to get loaded pretty heavy and try to get some strength gains in their in-season programming. If it's yellow light, that means they have a game the next day. And so we're still going to load them, but we're going to cut the load down a little bit. We're going to cut the sets and reps down a little bit because, again, we want them to be we want them to perform as well as possible in their game. And then if it's red light, it's they're coming to me on game day, but we're still going to do stuff to get a little bit of strength work in. We're still going to do stuff for their mobility and to create some dynamic power. but they're still going to train even on game day. And we're seeing more and more of that, obviously, in the NBA and in Major League Baseball, where they're playing 5-6 times a week. You're going to have to train on game day as well. And so when we can explain it to those our athletes that, hey, LeBron James is working out on game day as well, it's not affecting his shot, they sometimes buy into it more. And so, I mean, especially like if I'm teaching a weightlifting class and they have my class on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and they're a basketball player and they have three games that week, if we didn't work out on game day or the day before a game, there'd be weeks that they don't even train. So being able to explain how to continue to get those strength gains throughout the year while playing multiple sports, it goes a long ways to what we talked about by being able to explain the why behind what we do to everybody involved, whether it's the athlete, whether it's the parent of the athlete, or whether it's the head sport coach.
Yeah, and one of the things I think I saw this last week on Twitter, I think you shared a video of maybe one of your classes or after school programs there of a room full of young women in the weight room having fun, which I think is something that you've mentioned multiple times throughout this interview, which I love the importance of that. But also I feel like you just don't see it as often. Maybe again, that's kind of pointing to the intimidation factor. But you know, how important is that to have an introduction of weight training in adolescent women specifically?
Yo, 100%, because I mean, that is, we touched on it earlier about the emotional aspect of working out, how it relieves stress, it reduces anxiety, reduces depression rates, and the highest demographic of people that say they have anxiety or rates of depression is female teenagers. And so by being able to get them involved in something that can help with their confidence and help reduce anxiety and depression rates is huge. And it doesn't matter if you play a sport or not. And it doesn't matter if you're the most in shape person or you're extremely out of weight. Everybody wants to look a little bit better. And so there's more and more people that there's more and more females that are understanding that they're not going to look like a guy from working out. They're going to be, it's going to help them with their shape and with their confidence. And so it's been awesome to see, especially at Windermere Prep in the short time that I've been here, the females that have really embraced the weight room. And it's like, so we do, I mean, we're in our classes, they're 90-minute classes, and we'll do a dynamic movement prep. We'll do 15, 20 minutes of speed or agility, and then 35, 40 minutes of strength training. And it's the females never want to run. They never want to run. All they want to do is lift weights. And that's something that's completely switched to think of, like, hey, females would rather go for a jog than lift heavy weights. And these girls they love the weight room, and they understand that it's going to help with their confidence. It's going to, if they play a sport, it's going to help reduce injuries. It's going to improve their sport performance, but it's also going to help them look better. And they're not going to look like a guy, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. This question here, it's a little bit for me. I've always wondered about this. I've had people come up to me if I'm on the beach or in shorts in the summertime, that sort of thing, comment on the size of my calves. They like my calves, right? Complete strangers come up like, why are guys obsessed with calves? And this is just good genes. You know, I used to be a chubby guy. I think my dad had nice genes, or, you know, nice calves. His father probably had nice calves. So it's probably a luck of the draw sort of thing. But you know, what are guys' obsession with calves?
You know what? That is a funny question, because one of my best friends down here, he works with me at with the Athlete Maker Sports Performance, and he's probably like 185 pounds and can bench like 360. Like he's a strong dude, but he has tiny calves, and and we're down here in Orlando, Florida. Right. Middle of the summertime, it's pushing 100 degrees, and he will not wear shorts. And he is so self-conscious about his calves, and he does everything he can for them, but they just won't grow. And yeah, I really don't understand it. I mean, and I'm kind of like you. My wife always tells me I have nice calves as well, so I don't have to worry about it. We don't do much We don't have to do much for them.
And no, they're just there.
He does hundreds and hundreds of cap raises a day, and it won't do anything for them. And, yeah, I never really – I've always wanted big arms. I've never been that worried about my calves, but I guess I guess if you have small calves, it's something you think about.
Well, I don't know. Again, like I have this firm memory burned in my mind from – I don't know if you ever watched like MTV True Life, those docuseries shows growing up. There was one guy who wanted calf implants. He was actually from Massachusetts. Like he's from the area of Massachusetts that I'm from. But he was walking around all summer asking guys, you know, they're following him around. Hey, what do you do for your calves? What do you do for this? And he just ended up getting implants.
Yep. I remember that show. I believe Arnold Schwarzenegger has said, which I don't know if I believe, but he said the only thing he did for when he was a bodybuilder, steroid wise, was he took steroids for his calves to get his calves. Yeah.
That's like, Mark McGuire only shooting up his biceps, right? That's
right.
Yeah. No, you know, I think the big difference for me has been when I run, or even when I just find myself walking, I tend to be more of a toe to like mid striker. So I'm kind of on the balls of my feet more. So maybe I don't know, maybe that's why. But again, I think it's just genetics. Some people just can't, like, there's nothing you can do. You know, if you do enough bicep curls or enough bench presses, like, you're going to see the results eventually. But it's not exactly transferable to the calf raises or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can help them out a little bit, but I don't think they're going to grow that much.
Yeah, it's a fickle muscle, the calf. so you're an Orlando guy, you're a Florida guy here. You know, Super Bowl related. You know, this will be coming around right before the Super Bowl here. So I got to ask you, Tom Brady, TB12, pliability, the TB12 method. You know, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's you know, snake oil salesman type stuff, because I know a lot of people up this way think of that way, or is there some legitimacy behind it?
Yeah, I don't know that much about it. Obviously, you hear about the pliability and not really lifting heavy weight. I think there's some legitimacy about it, about what type of athlete you're working with. I mean, obviously, right. Tom Brady is one of the most skilled athletes of all time, and he doesn't need to be the most explosive athlete, and he needs to be durable, and he needs to be flexible and have that good mobility and stability and all that stuff he's working on. And he doesn't necessarily need to squat 300-400 pounds. And so I think it's more that the TB12, I think, is more geared towards sports specific, towards the elite athlete. Mm-hmm. But then again, and I think, I mean, I don't think Tom Brady is, I mean, he's the greatest quarterback of all time, but you wouldn't say he's one of the elite athletes of all time.
Whoa, I'm going to have to stop you right there. No, I agree. You look at him, right? Like, you see him like 40-yard time and stuff.
Exactly. but then you also, like, I mean, there's so much out there when you see guys working with, say, LeBron James, and he's doing some crazy stuff that I would never try with any of my athletes, but he's the most gifted athlete probably of all time. And you could probably do anything you wanted with him, and he's still going to be the greatest athlete of all time. And so those guys are just completely different, basically different species. I mean, I had the honor to meet who I call a good friend now, the Miami Heat strength coach. And the first time I met him was when LeBron was with the Heat, and it was I just reached out to him out of nowhere and was like, hey, my brother's in South Florida. I'm a high school strength coach. I'd love to meet you. And he was like, yeah, come on down, park here in the players' lot. And so I did. And the security guard was like, yeah, the weight room's third door down there on the right. And so I just walked right in, and I walked in, and LeBron was working out like 10 feet away from me, shirt off. And I mean, he's a different, he does not look human. I mean, that guy, when me and you say, hey, I would, my dream in high school was playing the NBA. And then you see guys like him and say, hey, there was no chance that was happening. Those guys are just built completely different.
Yeah, you're probably better off trying out hockey, right? I've had parents laugh at me. They're like, no, you should have picked up ice skates. You could be like 5'8 and still make it to the NHL.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple episodes previously, actually, we had Gunnar Peterson on, who's the strength coach. You might be familiar with that name. Strength coach of the LA Lakers. And on that topic of you mentioned LeBron, yeah, I'd asked him about that kind of unified approach with taking the basketball players. And he said it was a little different with LeBron. LeBron's in his own camp. Yeah. He's like, I don't touch him. You know, he's a physical specimen. So
guys
I'll work with, but LeBron's got his own team there. So
that's awesome that you had Gunnar on. I've met him a few times and a huge fan of him. And obviously he's probably one of in the whole industry, not just pro strength coaches of anything, he's got to be one of the top five biggest names of all time. Where, I mean, obviously, you know everything that he did before he went to the Lakers and still training the Kardashians. And
I know, yeah. My wife, you know, not a big sports fan, but when I brought up Gunnar Peterson, you know, name, she perked up right away. You know,
she knew him immediately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That guy's impressive that he's the Lakers strength coach and still running. Probably one of the most successful private gyms in the country as well.
Yeah, and he was a great conversation, great guest as well. So you're in good company here. So I think you wrapped up. You sufficiently answered all my questions here. So I appreciate the time for that, Mike. But before I let you go, this is something I like to do with all my guests here. It's this quick kind of lightning round segment, kind of word association. Five questions that have nothing to do with sports. Okay, so I ask and you answer kind of like in rapid fashion. You think we can play along here for real quick? Yeah. All right, great. Friend calls you up. This is just like we were talking about a little bit before here. Friend calls you up, and what's the one thing that you don't want to help them do?
give bad news to a loved one.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. See, I was just thinking to like help them move. Like, I think that's pretty high up on my list after today. I went to go pick up a couch. I'm not sure if I said this on air. I might be repeating myself, but couch in a triple family home, you know, going to bring it down a spiral staircase. I don't know if you've ever seen Friends, but there's this great episode of Friends where they're just trying to get this couch down. They're just all yelling pivot to each. You got to pivot. You got to pivot and twist.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Oh, moving is the worst. I mean, I don't have that much money, but I think if I move again, I might have to pony up the money for a moving crew.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it either. I've done it enough throughout college with, you know, sleeper sofas. Like, those are the worst. Like, forget it. You just those stay in the house. You know, they're not coming with you. Yeah. All right. So, how about question number two here? No calories. You don't gain anything. You don't see any repercussions for it. What's one meal that you could eat every day for the rest of your life?
Oh, pizza, no question. Pizza.
Any specific type?
Just cheese and pepperoni.
Okay.
Cheese and pepperoni. I mean, I can eat pepperoni all day. I mean, I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I mean, I see you got that Hofstra shirt on.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
New York has the best pizza, and so I mean, I could eat it. I could eat it every day, and actually, I think my sister probably eats it. Like, she doesn't have eat much variety, and she probably eats it 4 or 5 times a week, but. And she probably weighs about 120 pounds.
Well, good for her. I want her secret then.
Pizza and wine, or pizza and Prosecco, I believe she basically lives on, but it's working for her.
I'm going to jot that down. That's a good health tip, 2021. All right, so this is great. So pizza guy then, where do you stand on Chicago? Like, I just found out about Detroit style pizza, which I think that's amazing. It's Sicilian pizza with sauce on top. It's like a square pizza. You know, I'm not a big fan of these cities claiming names to, you know, kind of spice up their pizza. Can't we just have pizza?
Yeah, but there is some different. I have not heard of Detroit style, and I'm not a huge Chicago style. I mean, I think it's a little too rich and thick crust.
Yeah.
New York style pizza is the best. The big, like, huge slices that you got to fold in half, eat it like a sandwich. I mean, you can't beat that style. Not too thin of crust, but not too thick of crust. That's my style right there.
I agree with you. I lived in New York, like I said, after Hofstra, went to Astoria for a couple of years in the city.
Oh, yeah, so. That's the spot.
Oh, I loved it. It's great. You know, it's a big melting pot. So great as a 20-something living there. So that's awesome. So Buffalo, New York guy, I got to ask you, flats or drumsticks? What are you choosing here?
Oh, drumsticks all day. I still don't.
Really?
And I order all drums. I don't know what people's obsession are with flats. It's just not as much meat and they're harder to eat.
So I think my issue with the drumsticks is you get the connective tissue there sometimes. Sometimes you get like a real chewy piece that doesn't really, like the meat doesn't always feel right. Like I feel like the meat is like a little bit sweeter in the flats. And then my rule of thumb is, you know, you pull it right at the knuckle where the connective tissue is and you pull the small leg out. So then you just have like one big, you know, pretty much a drumstick at that point.
True. I'm going to have to, next time I eat it, I'm going to be thinking about which, I'll order both and be thinking about which is a little better.
Now, what's the famous places out there? So is there's Dinosaurs BBQ, right? Is that one of the famous?
That's Syracuse.
Okay.
The famous wing spot is the Anchor Bar and Duff's. And so okay. I think the Anchor Bar is what their claim to fame is, basically that they kind of invented Buffalo wings. But yeah, so those are the two biggest famous ones right there.
So did I offend you? This just dawned on me. Did I offend you at all with the multiple Tom Brady questions? Are you a Buffalo Bills fan?
Oh, I'm 100% a Buffalo Bills fan. But you did not offend me at all with the Brady. I mean, I find myself rooting for Brady, even though the Bills, when they were playing him, it wasn't even like.
It wasn't a rivalry.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a fan of excellence and a fan of greatness. And I mean, you got to root for Tom Brady and respect everything that he did. And I'm rooting for him in the Super Bowl. And Rob Gronkowski is from Buffalo, New York.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You got to love Gronk as well. So, no, Brady. And even, I mean, I root for, even though, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're my team, but I mean, I root for Alabama all the time as well. Mm-hmm. You got to respect Saban. I mean, all these other teams have the same facilities and pay their coaches the same amount of money and they could recruit just as well, but Saban just keeps getting it done. So I respect greatness.
No, and I think sports are better when you have an identified villain that everyone can kind of root around, whether it's the Yankees of the 90s or the Patriots recently or Alabama. You know, I think that's great. But I love, like, personally, like, you know, I know a lot of people in New England who are like, oh, I don't like Buffalo winning. Like, this is kind of like egg on the face. It's embarrassing. Like, this is great. Like, I love, like I said, I never thought of Buffalo as a real rival or anything.
Yeah,
but to see them kind of come up, it's great to kind of see them, like, finally get their due. And Josh Allen, I mean, I don't know how you watch that guy and don't love him. You know, he's he leaves it all out there. So I'm a Bills fan, pseudo.
Yeah, well, and I mean, how can you not be when you watch the Bills Mafia? You got to be respect that. Right.
Okay, so maybe this is my follow up question here. How many tables have you gone through in your life?
None at a Bills game. Now in college, I did a few times, but that had nothing to do with the Bills.
Right? Yeah, it was a pregame for the Bills game. Right? It was in preparation for it.
Yeah. I got to get back up to a Bills game though.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully sooner rather than later with how things are going here. Okay, so we have one last question. If you could vacation, we'll end on a light note here. If you could vacation anywhere in the world, again, money's not an issue. Where are you going?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll tell you what. I've done a little bit of traveling in the last, I guess like last 15 years. I've been able to go to a decent amount of countries and still the favorite place that I've been is Mallorca, Spain. It's an island off of the mainland, off of Barcelona. It's like the bigger island next to Ibiza, where Ibiza is that big party island. Mm-hmm. Mallorca is a little more laid back, but it's beautiful. And so Mallorca, Spain's a favorite place that I've been so far.
I love that. I think that's great. I mean, Spain and Greece are my two like must-have Europe places. But I think if money was not an issue, I think the Maldives, you know, you ever see pictures of that? It's just, you know, a little island and you got all these huts that are just in like shallow water and you can dive out into your own pool. Like that seems like a good time for me.
No, that's it. That sounds like a good time too. I'll take the Maldives over Mallorca right now, just because I've never been. So I'm
okay. Cool. All right, we'll book a flight, huh? The two of us. That sounds great.
Yeah, let's go. We'll do a podcast from there.
Yeah, perfect. I love it. So I think you passed. I think you survived five questions that have almost nothing to do with sports. Almost.
No, I loved it. This was awesome.
All right. Well, Micah, thank you so much for taking the time out again to speak with us here today. So we wish you a happy and healthy rest of 2021. And where can the people get in touch with you if they want to find you on social media or any of the videos that you're sharing or any workouts or anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. I try to do a lot on Instagram and Twitter, and my handle on both of them is at KurtzM3, KURTZM3. And then I have my website, theathletemaker.com, www.theathletemaker.com, where I have a lot of workouts and videos on there as well. I mean, I'd love to connect with anybody that wants to continue the conversation. So, I mean, feel free to email me as well, where my email is on my Twitter and Instagram, but it's basically just last name, first name at Gmail. So KurtzMicah@gmail.com.
Can't go wrong with that. And you can follow, again, all of our brands on Twitter, at @coach_AD, at @traincondition, at @winninghoops, and myself, if you like, at @WesleySykes_. And you want to do that to follow those accounts to get a first look at who our next guest will be. But I'll give you a little bit of a hint. You know, he is a former NBA champion. He is a former defensive player of the year. And he attended St. John's University. So I don't know if Micah has any guesses there. But that will be released on February 11th. Micah, you have a guess?
I don't. And I'm a basketball guy. I don't. I'm gonna look it up in a minute.
Okay. Well, until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes. And thank you for listening to another installment of Sideline Sessions. And thank you, Micah.
Appreciate it. Thank you.